You see that iconic Robin's egg blue box tied with that crisp white ribbon, and immediately your heart knows what it means. It's more than just packaging, right? It's become this, well, global symbol of aspiration.
Absolutely. But what is, what precisely makes a brand like Tiffany & Co. so legendary,
Right.
so utterly enduring? We're talking nearly two centuries here.
It's a great question. That little blue box, it doesn't just hold jewelry.
No, it encapsulates this whole meticulously crafted narrative, doesn't it? A legacy that's been sustained through generations. It adapts, it evolves, yet somehow.
It stays Tiffany, distinctly Tiffany,
ASAP.
precisely. And today, that's what we're doing, embarking on a deep dive into that very legacy. Welcome, everyone.
Yeah, welcome. We're aiming to uncover the fascinating journey of Tiffany & Co. I mean, the name itself is just synonymous with luxury, with diamonds, with that instantly recognizable design.
Our mission today is really to understand how this global powerhouse got here, from its pretty surprising origins through
Right.
its most breathtaking and, frankly, expensive creations,
Some really staggering pieces.
and into its diverse modern collections. How has it stayed such a powerful symbol of status, of quality, for so long?
And we've got some great sources to draw on. We're going to unpack the strategic brilliance, the cultural impact, basically what makes Tiffany tick.
All right, let's dive in, starting right at the beginning. Because when you think Tiffany now, it's high-end jewelry, diamonds.
Of course.
But the origin story, it's actually quite different. Charles Tiffany, he teamed up with John Young
Back in 1837.
in Manhattan. And here's the twist, get this, for its first few years, it wasn't a jewelry store at all.
No. It specialized in stationery and bric-a-brac, little trinkets and things.
It's kind of wild, isn't it? A brand known for billion-dollar jewels, starting with pens and, well, odds and ends.
It is a fascinating paradox. But, maybe that early diversification wasn't just about finding their feet. Maybe it helped build this image of being like a substantial, reliable place first.
Building trust before they went full luxury.
Possibly. It hints at Charles Tiffany's strategic mind, understanding the market before diving headfirst into high-end jewelry.
That's a really key point. And that strategic thinking, it definitely intensified. So there was a brief partnership change, Tiffany, Young, and Ellis's.
Right, for a bit.
But then Charles Tiffany took sole ownership in 1853, and he was clearly business-focused. He pivoted hard, almost entirely towards valuable jewelry.
And renamed it Tiffany and Company.
But he didn't just change what they sold, he changed how they sold it. This part's revolutionary.
He absolutely did. I mean, think about it. How does a new luxury brand build trust back then? A time with, let's be honest, probably some shady practices around.
Exactly. So what did he do?
Two things, groundbreaking things. First, set prices. No haggling.
Wow. Okay.
Second, no credit payments. Cash on the barrel head, essentially.
In an era where negotiation was standard and credit was common, that's radical.
Totally radical. But it screamed transparency, integrity, exclusivity, even. It set a standard for trust that was, pretty rare.
Talk about being ahead of the curve. And speaking of ahead of the curve, that blue book.
Ah, yes, the famous Blue Book.
It debuted way back in 1845, a mail order catalog showing off their latest designs. And it's still going today.
It is, which is remarkable in itself. That early commitment to, publishing their designs created the sense of anticipation, of authority.
It wasn't just a list of stuff for sale.
No, it was curated, presented. It
Yeah.
elevated the whole perception right from the get-go.
And the sheer versatility of Tiffany's, especially during the American Civil War. This is striking.
Yeah, this part's interesting.
The company actually supplied the Union forces with flags, surgical tools, even swords for close combat.
Swords. Can you imagine? But at the same time, their silverware is winning awards at international expositions.
It shows incredible resilience, right? But also something deeper.
I think so. By helping out during the war, Tiffany wasn't just adapting, it was like weaving itself into the American story.
Becoming part of the national fabric.
Exactly. That mix of patriotism and incredible craftsmanship. It built this deep legacy of quality, made them feel indispensable almost.
It's an amazing reach, but maybe one of the most defining early moments. 1879, Charles Tiffany buys this diamond.
Ah, the one. The legendary Tiffany Diamond.
Down in South Africa, initially what, 287 carats? Huge.
Massive.
Yeah.
Later cut down to 128 carats, which is still enormous. And famously worn by, Audrey Hepburn, Lady Gaga, Beyoncé.
The icons.
But here's something for you, the listener, to think about. How does one single priceless diamond like that actually help a brand that also sells, you know, more accessible things?
Does it risk making them seem too out of reach?
Or does it just create this halo effect, lifting the perception of everything they sell simply by association?
It's a great question, a real luxury paradox. That one spectacular stone does seem to cast a glow over everything else.
It does.
So after Charles Tiffany died in 1902, his son, Louis Comfort Tiffany,
LCT, the artist,
he joins as design director and keeps that experimental vibe going. Metals, chinaware, luxury watches, really broadening the scope.
Yeah, Louis Comfort Tiffany was a major force. He pushed boundaries, brought in that Art Nouveau style. It meant the brand didn't just sit still. It kept innovating creatively.
And the brand kept growing physically, too. They moved to the current Fifth Avenue store in 1940.
The iconic one.
Bringing that Atlas statue with the clock. You see it, you know it, it's a landmark.
That statue itself, it's kind of a subtle message, isn't it? About enduring time, holding up history.
I like that. Now, moving into more modern times, there were some shifts in ownership, briefly owned by Avon.
Yeah, Avon Products, Inc. From 78 to 84, then sold to investors, went public in 87.
What's really interesting, though, is during the 1990 U.S. recession, their adaptability.
Oh, yeah, that was smart. They deliberately emphasized lower-priced options.
To seem more affordable.
Right. But without losing the luxury feel. It was a careful balancing act, presenting themselves as accessible while maintaining that high-end image. Many brands struggle with that during downturns.
That adaptability seems like a core theme. It's continued, right, into these recent, sometimes surprising collaborations.
Absolutely. Diamond smartphones with SoftBank. Esports trophies for Riot Games.
And those Nike Air Force shoes. Special Tiffany Nikes. That's a long way from stationary or even classic diamonds.
It is. And look, it's not just about reaching new people. It's a masterclass in keeping a heritage brand cool and relevant.
Injecting modern envy without watering down the core identity.
Exactly. Partnering with unexpected names signals that luxury isn't stuck in the past. It evolves with culture. It subtly tells a new generation, hey, this aspiration is still for you, rather than seeming like, you know, just your grandmother's jeweler.
It's a calculated risk, but it seems to pay off in visibility and, well, youth appeal.
For sure. And their status today, undeniable. Yeah. LVMH, the luxury giant, bought Tiffany & Co. in 2021.
For over $15 billion. That's a statement.
It really is. It cements their position as a global powerhouse. The products are still powerful symbols of prestige, of status.
Which is a perfect segue. Let's talk about that prestige, specifically the sheer financial value, the artistry of Tiffany's most sought-after creations.
Yeah, let's look at some of the pieces that have hit incredible prices at auction.
It really shows you the heights these things can reach. It's not just about the brand name, it's the piece itself.
Well, and what's illuminating here is how these auction results highlight more than just the gem's value. It's the history, the art, the designer's vision wrapped up in it.
They're like wearable art.
Exactly. Infused with history and that unique Tiffany touch.
So starting right at the very top, the Medusa pendant.
Oh, the Medusa. Stunning piece.
Created around 1904 by Louis Comfort Tiffany himself, it sold for, wait for it, $3.7 million.
Wow. At a Sotheby's auction in 2021.
Described as mesmeric serpentine, made of opal, gold, garnet with these articulated snakes. It really captures that LCT natural motif style, and it blew past its estimates.
It really exemplifies that early 20th century character, the unique flourishes you see in top-tier jewelry. It shows the lasting power of Louis Comfort Tiffany's experimental Art Nouveau designs, the artistry, the story behind it. That's where the huge premium comes from.
Okay, next up, a sapphire and diamond ring. This one went for $1.3 million.
And not just any sapphire.
Right. An 8-carat cushion-cut cashmere sapphire. These are like the gold standard, super rare, considered the truest blue gems.
And this one, analyzed as having no enhancements, completely natural.
Which is a huge deal in gems, flanked by old European-cut diamonds, sold back in 2015.
That rarity, the untouched quality of cashmere sapphires, it makes the piece incredibly valuable. It just shows Tiffany's knack for sourcing and showcasing the absolute best natural wonders. They know that provenance, that lack of treatment, drives immense value in the ultra-luxury world.
Then there's a necklace. The Schlumberger Hedges and Rose necklace, sold for around $530,000.
Designed by the legend Gene Schlumberger. He was so prestigious, Tiffany actually let him sign his own creations.
That says something. This necklace blends gold, yellow beryl, turquoise, diamonds. it creates this tendril-like cascade, like a blossoming flower.
It came from a pretty prominent private collection too, Charlotte and George Schultz, sold in 2022.
Schlumberger's vision, mixing those materials to evoke nature, it's just
You
masterful.
can spot his work. It's highly sought after. It's got that connection to nature, but also this like whimsical playfulness that makes it stand out. Collectors really go for that artistry.
Okay, moving on. The Celeste ring. This one sold for about $440,000. What's interesting here is the mix of diamonds,
Yeah, it uses colorless diamonds and pink-tinted colored diamonds.
which kind of challenges that old idea that any color, like pink tints, were imperfections, right?
Exactly. Shows how deliberate design can blend different types, different qualities to create something elegant. It turns what might have been seen as a flaw into an aesthetic choice.
At the center is a 10-carat round brilliant diamond rose gold mounting. Gives it a very romantic feel.
It really highlights Tiffany's innovation, challenging those conventional ideas about perfect gems. Design intent elevating and redefining value, making individuality and warmth part of the appeal.
And one more for our top examples. A tourmaline and diamond ring, around $326,000.
This one features a Paraiba-type tourmaline, that vibrant electric blue. They call it Caribbean blue.
Gorgeous color. And the design is Bombay bomb-shaped, kind of a vintage Edwardian look.
Right. And the tourmaline is from Mozambique, which is now the biggest source for these amazing gems. It's vivid, got that Art Deco vibe, sold in 2021.
That Caribbean blue is stunning. It reminds you, Tiffany doesn't just do classic diamonds. They embrace rare, striking gemstones from all over.
Shows that commitment to both heritage styles and discovering new, exciting materials.
So beyond these huge auction prices, Tiffany's ongoing collections are where you really see their design philosophies at play and how they connect with people day to day.
Absolutely. We can't cover everything, obviously, but we picked out a few key collections that tell a great story.
They're not just lines of jewelry. They're like narratives you can wear.
Precisely. Each series has a story, connecting with wearers on a level beyond just, oh, that looks nice. It's symbolic.
Okay, let's start with Tiffany Locke. You see these pieces, they look like padlocks.
Symbolizing togetherness, unity. That's the idea.
And it's not just the look. Our sources say the designer spent a whole year perfecting this innovative swiveling mechanism in the clasp.
A year on a clasp. That speaks volumes, doesn't it? About their dedication to the craft, the
It
function.
really does.
It's that subtle reinforcement of the brand promise, enduring quality, thoughtful design, connecting the symbol unity with like perfect engineering.
Wow. Okay, then there's Tiffany Hardware. This one's a direct nod to New York City.
Yeah, the architecture. It's meant to capture the balance and tension of life in a busy city. Lots of chain link styles, orbs, padlocks.
It feels very urban, very dynamic.
Right. Strong, but still elegant. It speaks to that modern customer who likes a bit of edge with their luxury.
And Tiffany T, this is all about the letter T.
Which they've apparently used as a motif, subtly, for like 4 decades.
The collection focuses on connectivity, strength. You've got T True, T1, T Smile, different takes on the T shape.
It blends timelessness with modern style, and it shows how versatile a simple, strong motif can be. You can keep reinterpreting it.
It's smart branding, really. Minimalist but iconic.
And instantly recognizable as Tiffany.
We definitely have to mention Return to Tiffany. Everyone knows this one.
Oh, yeah, the classic heart tag, usually.
It's an homage to a 1969 keyring that had "Please return to Tiffany & Co." engraved on it.
And the collection just replicates that iconic shape and text. Different metals, sometimes enamel colors, maybe Amazonite in that Tiffany blue.
It really positions Tiffany jewelry as a status signifier, a piece of history you carry.
It's brilliant marketing, really. Tapping into their own heritage, turning something practical into something desirable. It reinforces that idea. If it's Tiffany, it's special. It belongs.
Next, Tiffany Victoria. This one's all about nature.
Very floral, connecting wearers to the natural world. Beyoncé modeled a lot of these pieces.
And they use lots of different gems, diamonds, pearls, sapphires, morganite. What's interesting too is how it ties into their sustainability efforts.
Right. It shows how they're trying to integrate ethical practices with design, luxury with a conscience, connecting nature-inspired beauty with actual conservation work. That resonates today.
Then there's a collection celebrating a specific designer, Elsa Peretti.
Hugely influential. Her designs at one point apparently made up like 10% of all Tiffany sales.
Wow.
Yeah, she offered this near limitless variety. Hundreds of items reflecting her innovative sculptural style over decades.
You know her pieces when you see them. That modern, organic, fluid feel.
Absolutely. very wearable elegance. She profoundly shaped the Tiffany aesthetic.
And finally, let's touch on Tiffany 1837, named for the founding year.
This one's all about honoring that long history. Timeless designs, jewelry, watches, accessories.
And they're all engraved with 1837.
Right. It constantly emphasizes the legacy, the craftsmanship established way back then. It sends a message of stability, heritage, in a world that's always changing.
Okay, fascinating stuff. Now, let's pivot slightly, go beyond the shine for three surprising facts about Tiffany & Co., things you might not know.
All right, I like these little hidden gems of information.
First up, that color, Tiffany blue. We all know it, but do you know where it actually came from?
This is a brilliant example of early branding. Strategic branding before people even really talked about it like that.
So it debuted with the first Blue Book catalog back in 1845.
That's right. Charles Tiffany himself chose that specific shade of Robin's egg blue. It just became known unofficially at first as Tiffany blue.
And then Pantone codified it. 1837 blue.
Yep. And the company copyrighted the color in 1998 to keep it exclusive. It's more than just a color. It's an instant global signal of prestige. You know what's inside, or at least the promise of it.
Incredible visual identity. Okay, second surprising fact. Here's a name you probably don't recognize. Comfort Tiffany.
Comfort Tiffany. Sounds cozy.
Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't about jewelry. It's about Charles Tiffany's father.
The backstory.
It turns out Comfort Tiffany provided a crucial $1,000 loan to help his son Charles and John Young get started, secure their first property for Tiffany and Young.
Wow. $1,000 back then was serious money.
Absolutely. And he apparently encouraged Charles's business sense from a young age, even let him manage the family's general store when he was just 15.
So it highlights that often behind the big success story, there's this foundational support that doesn't always get the credit.
Exactly. Without Comfort's early belief in, well, cash, maybe Charles's dream wouldn't have even gotten off the ground. Shows those deep, often unseen roots of success.
That's a great piece of hidden history.
And finally, something completely different. The Tiffany Cross. And no, it's not jewelry.
Okay, intriguing. The Tiffany Cross.
This was actually a medal of honor designed by Tiffany & Co.
Really? A military medal?
Yeah. For recognizing heroism in combat, mainly for Navy and Marine personnel, mostly around the interwar period WWI actions.
That can expect of the Civil War swords, kind of. Their role in national symbols, not just luxury.
It does. It was rare, but had some interesting exceptions. Awarded to Floyd Bennett and Richard Byrd for flying to the North Pole.
Wow. Okay. And someone else.
Frank Schlitt for assisting Marines down in Nicaragua. It just shows the sheer breadth of their design work and influence, way beyond gems and silver.
That's genuinely surprising, designing military honors alongside diamond rings.
What an extraordinary journey we've covered today, huh?
It really has been. Nearly two centuries packed into this deep dive.
We've gone from, you know, stationary and bric-a-brac,
right,
to a global luxury icon. We've looked at those breathtaking auction pieces, unpacked the thinking behind the collections.
And dug up some surprising history, too.
Yeah.
It reveals a much broader impact than maybe people realize.
It really speaks to constant innovation, smart adaptation.
And just an unwavering commitment to quality, but also to that strategic branding. They've consistently managed to redefine luxury for the times.
So thinking about all this, for you, our listener, what really stands out? How has a company like Tiffany stayed so relevant, kept that allure for almost 200 years?
Is it the designs? Those clever business moves?
Mm-hmm.
That incredibly powerful branding with Tiffany Blue? Or maybe those deep, sometimes unexpected, historical roots we talked about?
It really raises a bigger question, doesn't it? In our world of constant change, fleeting trends, what actually makes something timeless?
Hmm. And how does Tiffany's story challenge, or maybe affirm, your own idea of what enduring luxury and craftsmanship really mean? What part of their incredible longevity do you find the most compelling, or perhaps even inspiring? Something to think about.